Oh, my name is Ruth Britt. My age is 83 years old. I was born February the 17th, 1936, in Shelby County of Memphis, Tennessee. And I was born at the John Gaston Hospital. Today's date is April 1st, 2019, April Fool's Day, we call it. And I'm here in Chattanooga, although, as I stated, I was born in Memphis.
My name is John Lee Britt III. I am 46 years old. Today's date is April 1st, 2019. We're in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and have mom in front of me and my son on dysautonomy.
My name is John Lee Britt IV. My age is 14. Today's date is April 1st, 2019. My location is Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Hey, Ma. One of the reasons I wanted to do this is because to record like our history and try to pass down what you done and what things we had to go through to John, so he can have appreciation for who he is and his family and just have a pride, but not over pride. And it's a concern now with the Toms. Now, like when I was his age, I thought some things wouldn't be going on, like people using the N-word again and things like that. But I do know there's some things, and I didn't find this out until grandmother died and my cousin Kenneth talked about it, that I never knew that anyone burned a cross in the front yard at granddad's house, at grandma's house. And really, I wanted to ask you why, because I didn't know this till in college. Why did you do the sit-in at University of Memphis, at Memphis State?
The Supreme Court decision came out in 1954, the year I graduated from high school. And so there were five of us went out there, I think the 1st of June, because school was out the last of May in during that time, and attempted to register for college. So that was why the cross was burned. And it was just an attempt to go to that school at that time. But of course, we didn't get admitted. We weren't allowed to even go to the office. We went to a classroom. And the dean talked to us, and of course cameras and all of that kind of things were there. But it's a court decision. A court decision came later, admitting blacks, African Americans, whatever you want to be called, to it was Memphis State then, which is now the University of Memphis. So there were five of us. Let's see, Marty Knowles, Van Hooks, now she is, and Reverend McGee, who was a minister even then, although he hadn't been out of high school that long. But it wasn't unusual to have students become ministers while attending school. Elijah Noel, who was a member of your auntie's church at that time, and Nellie Peoples. Of course, I don't know about Nellie Peoples, but Elijah Noel and Joseph McGee are gone now. They're no longer with us. Mm-hmm.
Did y'all organize it? Did they
We were kind of... Well, in a way, we kind of knew each other. Like I said, Elijah Noel was, and his wife, he was already married at that time. And we kind of, each one kind of knew each other in a way. You know, Martis and I went to the same high school. Nellie Peoples, and I had been in the Teen Towners on WDIA, was in it, but she was a teenage reporter. We weren't friends, but you kind of knew each other. Now, Joseph McGee, as I said, was a minister's instructor. At that time, people kind of knew, even the young ministers at that time, because black churches visited more. You were some kind of way in their face. Because was when I was baptized, I remember Fields Jr. was one of the ministers. He was a student at Manassas at that time. And so he was the minister that preached on the day that I was baptized. And I was, eighth grade? In other words, we were about the same age, but he was already a minister even at the time. So we kind of, in circles or in or the parents knew each other. See, parents kind of knew each other at that time. And people knew Elijah Noel because he had been, I think, the first black to get hired in the position he was in at that time at the post office, because he had been in the military already, you know, at that time. That was in 54 when we went to the university, to Memphis State. That's what it was called then. It's small school at that time, but now it's, you know, there's no comparison to the size now and then that it was. Of course, it was cheaper. It was cheap to go there, too. You'd have to go out of town to school mostly. There was Lemoyne in Memphis at that time. And a lot of people went to Tennessee State that went to school. A lot of folks may have gone and got little scholarships to go, but they came back, you know, because of, as I said, it was just, you know, the times and the money. And being able to go, you know, somewhere. Of course, that still exists now.
At the time when I went to graduate, Dad wanted me to go to university. He was hoping I would choose to go to University of Memphis. But at the time I graduated, and the school I went to, because y'all sent me to a private school, it just... University of Memphis, or Memphis State, it's still called Memphis State. They changed like right after I graduated, I think. It just didn't have that prestige at the time, or it just, I wanted to go out and go to school to be in the dorms and just get exposure of somewhat being independent. I did take a class or two there at University of Memphis, and compared to the college I went to, it seemed a lot bigger, and it was bigger than UT Martin and Tennessee State. Left UT Martin, just felt my second year there, I just felt a lot, some racial tension. So I was following after Kenneth. I realized, well, I'll just follow him, go his path. But after those first 2 years, I decided to go to a historically black school because of the tension I felt because I joined the jazz band. I might have not have been as good as some of the other members, but I was still able to participate and be in some concerts. And that's where I felt like I had the most tension on. But I don't think John understands sometimes is why you get, while we are on him a lot about his schoolwork. One, I think you're on him because you used to substitute teach. And I try to encourage him because from my experiences in the education you gave me and from the experience that the people I met doing like Camp Anytown. After that camp, I kept those connections for a little bit. I noticed a difference between where they were at and what schools they were aiming for, like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and the schools I was just looking for, which were just schools out of the city. So that really kind of changed me too, to look at like maybe I started to apply for Stanford. I didn't finish the application process because I wanted to go to the University of Evansville, and I was accepted, but we didn't have the money, even with the scholarship, to go. But I know even back then in the 90s when I graduated what we needed to know. And I just feel like right now, at least in Chattanooga with the public schools that John attended, other than his elementary school with the first principal, that it's not it's not getting him to the point where I was when I graduated, it seemed like, which I still lacked some things when I graduated, but it seemed like he's lacking in certain places. It's a different generation and different requirements, but I think the school system, the public school system here, the schools he's been to is not helping him and other students, not just John. Other students are even in, from what I've seen, visiting in worse situation than he's in.
I feel that way too when I see him, because the things he's had at this point do not include what I had. And here I am, 83, graduated from high school in 54, and he hasn't had some of the things that I had in elementary school up to this point. When I look at least the things that I have looked at that he's been over, they haven't done percentages and they haven't done all this kind of thing in math and science. I know was bad for us because we didn't really have a lab, not equipped as some of the schools I've been in, you know, in later years. And we didn't, you know, really have a science lab. Of course, we would be outside maybe doing something, you know, learning trees and that type of thing. But still, so far as the book work and knowledge, we didn't have, those things compared. Not even to, at 55, I went to a Philander, you know, not even to them. And it was a small school at that time, a small college, of course. After Mr. Clinton won the presidency, he did do a lot for that school, there. But and with the way things are changing so fast, just look at cell phones and all of this type of thing in the last 10 years, 15 years. And I think about him not being able to even buy one in later years if he doesn't do better in school. And that's my big worry, even for the city, and not only here, Memphis and Mississippi too, because, you know, we have a strong connection down there. And that is a big part of the puzzle of crime in these neighborhoods. It's a lot of it is about education. So that's why, I worry about him and education and other young people, and I always ask them, how are you doing in school? Are you reading? That type of thing. If you're watching the news, I always ask them something related to school. What book have you read lately? What are y'all reading at school? But it's not happening, because children now can't, at his grade level, he can't even read cursive writing. Now, he goes to look at these documents of the United States, the old documents. He cannot read them because he cannot read cursive writing, nor do it. And they don't, and when one is asked to sign their name, not manuscript, but cursive, because they want a signature, they can't do it. So that's why I had said I was going to volunteer to do that. But age and health is taking its share, so it makes a difference. But that's why I worry about education, is that it's not meeting the mark. And, you know, parents don't seem to be worried about it. The parents that should be, the age of people that should be worried about it, don't seem to be worried about it. And some of them don't even want their children to learn or do certain things. So it is, because I'm still in touch, you know, with folk in Memphis. And like I said, Mississippi too. And in talking about, and Arkansas, because I have a friend in Arkansas. So We and a friend in Arkansas and I are about the same age. So she's in, her state of health has changed a lot. Although she and her husband ain't having any children, they have worked with a lot of children, and the husband is gone now, and her health is not improved at all. So it's a deep concern, but one has to have faith and believe that some people will achieve no matter what, but the numbers could be greater with better education, and especially in those not just kindergarten, but pre-kindergarten and on up, because by third or fourth grade they should be able to write do cursive writing as well as read it. So, but now here he is in eighth grade and can't. So if he goes to these places, some of I've been to, he can't even read those historic documents, you know. So it's a great concern. That's why, you know, I try to, you know, hope that you will get him to associate with kids in a different caliber. Maybe that will encourage him to learn, not just the folk, you know, that he knows and the people at church, but other groups of people. That staying in his group is not going to help. He's going to have to reach out and associate with other children and adults as well, and to know that he's behind, you know, still. But I still pray, and I have to believe, you know, and try to encourage. I have to do, we all have to do those things. We all have to do those things, because education is still, and it's not only in the South like that, it's in the North as well, because, you know, I have people in California, friends that I grew up with in California, just about all of the major states, because during the times I grew up, families knew each other, and you kind of kept in touch, and even when parents died, you were still in touch with the people in your group, a generation, you know, near your generation. That's another thing. We are not as in touch as we should be, and reaching out and talking about things that we need to talk about, rather than having celebrations of eating all the time. That's one thing, you know.
Now that you got faced with...
Because 40% of the jobs now, I imagine more than 40%, are not going to be around when he becomes an adult. Just think about how they're going to be having driverless cars and trucks, and they're using drones even in agriculture now. So a lot of things, because I went to the field as a young person, made enough money to buy shoes and a lot of things, you know, that's how we could make money. But now, with technology and the way things are going, that's not going to happen. I know all this going on about the border, but they're not going to need that, all of this, that, you know, that in later years when he grows up.
I understand that. There's another story you tell, John. You used to tell me a lot about when you were younger, I guess around John's age, you used to go to down to Mississippi to pick cotton Arkansas.
Yeah, we of course, at one time, my daddy had a field. He was growing cotton himself, because, see, where your grandparents live, that neighborhood was country at the time I was growing up. So where they build a rubber plant, people farmed. And so we did, too. You know, my daddy did, too, because he was teaching us how to work. He grew sorghum and cotton and all kinds of things. he had hogs, you know, and all of that. He had hogs at the house there. So it was a time that people more or less grew ahead, you know, what they needed to live at that time. But but now you didn't get paid for helping your folks or doing the work in your folks' field or the neighbors' field. We had to, when we, you know, got maybe 13 or 14, we went on people's trucks. Of course, our parents knew the people or the drivers or the folk who were driving the trucks and where they went. because you were not going to be going just with somebody they didn't know. So we went to Mississippi, we went to places in Arkansas, and also places up in Tennessee. Now there was chopping cotton season that's going to be starting, would be starting soon. So on Saturdays, if someone was going, we would catch it, go, you know, on Saturdays and go. And have a little money, you know, so you have a little money for in your pocket. Depending on, of course, Mississippi paid more, but they had more snakes and all of that down there. And so a lot of us didn't go there too often. Mm-hmm. We went to up in Tennessee. We went to Arkansas as well, but, you know, Mississippi paid a little bit more at that time. And as I said, you had to go with people that your parents knew at that time. And Daddy did not go. Mama went sometimes in the summertime with us. But although we didn't have anything, my daddy didn't want Mama to work. So that was the going on then. Because he wasn't the only one that, you know, they figured the wife's supposed to be at home and the children and keeping up with the children and all of that kind of thing. And which I do kind of still believe in that type of life, because it is difficult to for everybody to be working in a house, you know, no matter what the modern belief is. It is hard for everybody to be working in the house. Children, the parents, everybody. The house is running itself. But with so much technology, I guess they would be able to in a few years to do it that way.
Well, John, go ahead, John. Ask a question.
What's your best memory of your childhood?
And my best memories? What you mean, the things we enjoyed the best, or
what would you call your best memory? Like, what would you call your best memory?
What would I call my best memory? I guess the times that we would spend visiting maybe cousins sometimes on the weekend in Memphis, and that wasn't too often, but we would all get an old car, the old truck, and we would, you know, to visit some of the cousins. They lived where Mama and, you know, our parents lived. They lived in the neighborhood where our parents lived before they moved out in Douglas, They lived in Orange Mound. Of course, Mama and Daddy lived in Orange Mound, because when I was born and Pauline was born, that's where, you know, we were living in Orange Mound. And so Charlie Pleasant was born at home out there in Douglas. You know, he wasn't born in a hospital, but he was born at home. But the best memories, I think, were the time spent with them and on maybe weekends. We didn't stay all night now. That was just the evening. We would go out there and then come back, you know. Those were good memories. Of course, some of them are gone now, but and the others, and we're not in touch with, I guess, because of problems they have had with their children and things that have happened. So, but those are some of the best memories. And then going to visit grandparents in Mississippi, you know, those were good times. Because our grandfather had a watermelon patch. So in the morning, we maybe get there in the evening, you know, in the car. But in the morning, the next morning, the older cousins would come and get us up and go to his watermelon patch and burst watermelons and eat the hearts of them. That was enjoyable, visiting down there, you know. We didn't go every year because I didn't see grandparents and great-grandparents until, about 8 or 9 before we, you know, met any grandparents, because they lived a distance away. So it wasn't easy getting up, going places like that at that time. Mm-mm. And then you had to kind of figure out the time to go because of the problems one could have traveling to those areas at that time. But everybody wanted to see their folks, you know. So that was the fun thing. And I'm sorry we didn't have more relationship with them, and to really know the, because Mama and both parents were from that area of Mississippi, you know, were born in that area. Of course, their parents had lived other places, because Mama Lucille said she was born in Kosciuszko. Daddy's people were gone when we got any age, you know. His parents and grandparents were gone. I mean, you know, his parents were gone. But I do remember those times very well.
You said you remember Mother Lucille. You said she was the slave in the family?
No, in the part of the family that's doing research says she had not been a slave, but her mother, that is the one that, you know, the cousins that live in Ohio are trying to check to see if she was, because I met her, and I'm a little bit older than the cousins that live in Ohio. So I told them that when I met her, her son said that she was at least 100 years old then. But that's something they, you know, they are trying to, you know, confirm or whatever, whether she was or whether she was not. And her husband, that's right, I met my great-grandfather too. They were, because he was very mobile and everything, his mind and everything, you know, he was doing very well at that time. And he was about 100 as well. But Daddy's people came from Virginia and went to, lived in Louisiana a while and then settled in Mississippi, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what the uncle said later. And said there are still some there in Virginia, because each one on my daddy's side had two sets of children, his mother as well as his father. Uncle Renette told me that both of them had two sets of children. So there are still, you know, as I said, there are still, you know, some there in Virginia, according to him. But think time goes on, you have to keep moving forward. You can't just rest on and worry about those things, you know. But but Rhoda in Ohio is doing some, you know, still doing some research on the family. But some of the family, both sides, some of them are related to each other, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's another issue she was telling me about since she's been doing it. But of course, she's got her grandchildren and great-grands at her house, so she doesn't have a lot of time because she's got to spend time with them. And so life is hard. Life can be very difficult, I'm telling you, especially if you're trying to do the right thing. Yeah.
So, John, this is one of the things I hope you get is that education always wasn't given to us. You had to stand up and had to affirm our rights or try to get people to say, hey, we have the right to be educated. So don't take it for granted. And at this time, you're going into high school. Which is an excellent time because there's so much you can do now in high school that I couldn't do or I didn't know you could do. Mm-hmm. And you can actually have taken college credits here. There's a high school here where you can actually get college credits. So when you graduate, you could be like a sophomore and stuff. But don't take it for granted because you have so much time in high school to do research or read whatever you're interested in and become really good at it before you even graduate. Like grandma here had to go and sit in to try to be admitted to the University of Memphis. At her time, the education wasn't equal. Like, I was upset at your previous elementary school because they wouldn't allow you to bring books home. And when I was coaching East Ridge, I saw the kids at East Ridge, they were doing homework on the fields in their textbooks. And I felt that was unfair and unbalanced. So that's why we had a meeting with the principal at one time and talk about it. I mentioned it to the school board. But that didn't change, but I did get a meeting with the principal. I ruffled somebody's feathers. Somebody felt like, uh-oh.
Well, go back to education. Now, when my mother went to school, she went to school, you know, the school was it was just a building near the church, a one-room schoolhouse. And it did not go to high school. She had to go to Jackson College because they had the other, you know, the other grade levels to finish high school. So that's how she finished high school. She had to go to Jackson, get a job working there at the school some kind of way to pay for her education to finish high school. And not only in her day, those kind of things were going on in my day too of being in high school. I know out in Tennessee, and that was for people to work in the fields at the different time. Because that was going on in outside of where we lived, in the area where we lived. The students, I was trying to think of some of those schools now. But it was out in, because Ms. Davis that moved next door to us in Douglas, where your great-grandmother lived. Her youngest sibling, Clifton, was going to school like that at that time. And but they did have the high school had a dormitory, so he was good in basketball. So that was, you know, that kind of helped him on to get on, you know, get to go and continue and to get out of high school. And he did later go on to college as well. But all of those things they slow you down. And because time is still passing by and you're getting older and all of that kind of thing. But schools are still not equal. But you're going to have to think about, you got to do a lot of education, educate yourself to stay abreast of things, what's going on. That's why I tell you about trying to watch the news and reading certain books, even if you don't read the whole magazines that we have, at least read part of it. I know we don't have a lot of things that other folk have, but you got to kind of push yourself here and not pay attention to you know, maybe your associates now. Okay. Oh, okay. Go on.
Oh. Are there any last things you all want to say to each other before we close the recording?
I want to say thank you for my mom to come and my son, John, although he didn't want to say thank you. But I want to thank y'all for doing this.
Yeah.
I think it was important.
I think so, too. And to actually have a conversation, especially about education. I just hope we can take it to, you know, I'm going to tell the people in Memphis about this and see if we can get it in our community out there because education is no matter how equal people might think it is now, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's just as far away as it was 100 years ago.